Heather sensed that this new technology was by its very nature going to be difficult to contain. But that wasn't something she was about to share with her 15-year-old daughter. Heather cleared down the wormhole and prepared to start a new search.
I need to work. Go. You can play later. 1 hour only.
With a look of contempt, Mary walked out, and Heather returned her attention to Uzbekistan. Anna Peterson, U.S. Navy, heroine of a 24x7 worm cam docusoap, had been heavily involved in the U.S.-led UN intervention in the water war raging in the Aral Sea area. A precision war was being fought by the Allies against the principal aggressor, Uzbekistan, an aggression which had threatened Western interests in oil and sulfur deposits and various mineral production sites, including a major copper source. Bright and technical, Anna had mostly worked on command, control, and communications operations. Worm cam technology was changing the nature of warfare, as it had much else. Worm cams had already largely replaced the complex of surveillance technology, satellites, monitoring aircraft, and land-based stations, which had governed battlefields for decades. If there had been eyes capable of seeing, every major target in Uzbekistan would have sparkled with evanescent wormhole mouths. Precision-guided bombs, cruise missiles, and other weapons, many of them no larger than birds, had rained down on Uzbek air defense centers, military command and control facilities, on bunkers concealing troops and tanks, on hydroelectric plants and natural gas pipelines, and on targets in the cities, such as Samarkand, Andijan, Namangan, and the capital, Tashkent. The precision was unprecedented, and for the first time in such operations, success could be verified. Of course, for now, the Allied troops had the upper hand in worm cam deployment. But future wars would have to be fought under the assumption that both sides had perfect and up-to-date information on the strategy, resources, and deployment of the other. Heather supposed it was too much to hope that such a change in the nature of war might lead to its cessation altogether. But at least it was giving the warriors pause for thought, and might lead to less meaningless waste. Anyhow, this war, Anna's war, the cold battle of information and technology, was the war which the American public had witnessed, partly thanks to the worm cam viewpoint Heather herself had operated, flying alongside Peterson's shapely shoulder as she moved from one clinical, bloodless scenario to another. But there had been rumors, mostly circulating in the corners of the Internet that still remained uncontrolled, of another, more primitive war proceeding on the ground as troops went in to secure the gains made by the airstrikes. Then a report had been released by an English news channel of a prison camp in the field where UN captives, including Americans, were being held by the Uzbeks. There were also rumors that female prisoners, including Allied troops, had been taken to rape camps and forced brothels deeper in the countryside. Revealing all of this clearly served the purposes of the governments behind the anti-Uzbek alliance. The Juarez administration's spin doctors weren't above highlighting the distressing idea of wholesome Anna from Iowa in the hands of swarthy Uzbek molesters. To Heather, this was evidence of a dirty, ground-level conflict far removed from the clean video game in which Anna Peterson had colluded. Heather's hackles had risen at the idea that she might be playing a part in some vast propaganda machine. But when she sought permission from her employer, Earth News Online, to seek out the truth of the war, she was refused. Access to the corporate worm cam facility would be withdrawn if she attempted it. While she was in the Hiram's ex-wife spotlight, she had to keep her head down. But then the glaring focus of public attention moved on from the mazes, and she was able to afford her own worm cam access. She quit from Eno, took a new bill-paying job on a worm cam biography of Abraham Lincoln, and went to work. It took her a couple of days to find what she was looking for. She followed Uzbek prisoners being loaded onto an open UN truck and driven away through the rain. They passed through the town of Nukus, controlled by Allied troops, and on into the country beyond. Here, she found, the Allied troops had established a prison camp of their own. It was an abandoned iron mining complex. The prisoners were held in metal cages, stacked up in an ore loader just a meter high. The prisoners were unable to straighten their legs or backs. They were held without sanitation, adequate food, exercise or access to the Red Cross or its Muslim equivalent, Merhamet.